moved on to, we're now going to go into chapter 4 of the book, so it's sampling. And we've been using sampling in the time domain from the very first week, and we've been using, and you were now sampling in the spatial domain in the mini project as the vehicle moves across its path. So sampling is just part of anytime we need to get measurements to do additional work by computer, whether it's a laptop, you know, MATLAB Python, or it's embedded in C, although you could certainly in MATLAB, there are embedded versions of MATLAB, by the way, that run in real time. So it just depends, right, what you're doing. So we either take measured data, or we can synthesize or plot. But anytime that we do this, we're going to need a sample. Okay, so we've now jumped into chapter 4 in signal processing first. And we'll take, you know, this is a second look at sampling. We'll do even a third look later as we get, you know, toward the end of the semester. So it's going to be with us a while. And then the next part of the semester is discrete time. So we're assuming starting in about a week, everything's sampled. And then we'll come back and do continuous time signals and systems in the last third of the class. So the order is a little unusual for this class. We're doing signals and systems first, both continuous time and discrete signals mainly, and continuous time and discrete time, Fourier series, mainly for continuous time signals, but we have to sample it to get anything by computer, and then sampling. So that's the first set of topics. A little bit of discrete time systems here before midterm one, and then we'll do discrete time for the third, the middle third of the class, signals and systems, transforms, convolution, and the last third we'll do transforms, convolution, and more signals and systems. Okay, so right now we're going to go and do a little deeper dive into sampling and the dual of this, which is reconstruction, right? So sampling, gathers, you know, every tune-up that we've done, pretty much every homework assignment that you had to plot something, you had to sample. So there we had a continuous time signal that we sampled to get a discrete time signal, a vector of values that we could continue crunching numbers or working with, plotting, playing back and over the audio system. Reconstruction is a dual of this, and that is to say, all right, sampling we kind of know. We start with continuous time. Maybe I should start using a different note on the Western scale, but anyway, here's our 440 hertz again, right? So A4 and the fourth octave. So we go sine of 440 hertz, and now what I'd like to do, and you'll notice that even plotting this, I had to sample it, and you kind of see a little bit of artifacts from that right here. Right, so as soon as we start with continuous time cosine, and what I want to sample it to get a discrete time cosine, and you know I've chosen a kind of an odd sampling rate, which you'll see in the MATLAB code where that comes from in just a second. But it's a lot more than we really needed to use. We know that we needed to sample it more than twice the maximum frequency to avoid any aliasing. We'll talk about that, to capture numbers, to capture the frequency. And here is much greater than 880. Hertz for the sampling rate. And the sampling period is just one, you know, over the sampling rates. Okay. So the MATLAB code's coming on the right on this slide in a bit. So what I like to do now is also, well, after we sample, that's wonderful, but I'd like to be able to go back to continuous time. I'd like to be able to reconstruct what I have in sample. So I can certainly sample, do a bunch of filtering and other things with it. I can change it. I can enhance the audio, I can, you know, pass it through a subwoofer at low frequencies, whatever I want to do. Right? So I can do lots of things for a subwoofer, you know, before I play it out. So I can filter out certain frequencies, I can keep certain frequencies, attenuate others. And then when I'm all finished with all that, now I want to go back to continuous time. So if it's audio, I want to play it back over the speakers as a continuous time signal. If it's an image, I'd like to display it on a monitor so it looks like a continuous time or continuous space picture. Not pixelated. Okay, so this reconstruction process is kind of interesting, and we'll talk about it quite a bit this lecture, and at other times in the semester as well. So here's the MATLAB code for this. By now, looking out of familiarity here by now, in the first few lines. So again, we just set the frequency at 440 hertz. I pick a sampling rate that's much greater than 2 times. That frequency F naught. So I'm picking 24, I could have picked 20, I could have picked 2.2 something greater than 2 times the maximum frequency. Now, what's the advantage of doing like 24 here versus 3? Get more definition and by your hand gesture. So more definition. So I better track the amplitude of the waveform. Okay, I still capture you, even if I sampled at 3 times F naught for my sampling rate. I still capture the frequency content of the cosine. It just in terms of amplitude, it doesn't look as nice, doesn't track as well, but I still actually capture the frequency content. It's kind of interesting. I can still reconstruct. I can still go from my samples and go back to continuous time, even if I only sample 3 times F naught. Now, if I sample 24 times F naught, I do a much better job at tracking the amplitude. That matters in certain applications. So in audio, this can certainly matter. So having some amount of oversampling is pretty helpful. Now, as you kind of notice, the notes on the piano key, on the 88 key piano, ended at 4186 hertz. Now, whenever you play a key, you're going to get that tone plus harmonics. You're not going to get just a pure, because it's going to sound, you know what a pure tone sounds like, it's a little bit artificial. It doesn't sound all that enjoyable. But with harmonics added, it's fine. That's a piano key. Hey, that's fine. Okay, so but when I'm sampling at 44,100, I'm way over sampling 4186. So I'm at almost more than 10 times that frequency. So you can do higher sampling rates than 44.1 or 48 kilohertz, 96 kilohertz, and so forth in audio. There are all kinds of sampling rates out there. Okay, so here I've done 24 times F naught, and that tracks pretty well, the signal. The book kind of talks about this. You want 20, 24, something much more than 2 times F naught to track the amplitude better. All right, third line here, I just get the sampling time as 1 over the sampling rate. The next up is T max, so what is that? What am I plotting here for T-max? Yeah, 1 over 440, but what's another name for 1 over the fundamental frequency? It's the period. It's a fundamental period. So I'm just plotting 1 period of the cosine, and that cosine has a frequency of 440 hertz. So numerically, yeah, it's 1 over 440, but in interpreting that, it's the I'm plotting 1 period of the cosine. So next up, that's what happens. So I have my range of T. So T is sample. So I'm taking instantaneous snapshots of the amplitude values of this cosine at uniformly spaced points in time. We'll see more of this a little bit visually. So that means that now if I just to generate the plot on the left, I just use the plot command. So it's my attempt at trying to show it as continuous time when actually I really honestly have sampled it and plotted it as if it were continuous time. The plot on the right is to explicitly plot the sample values, the amplitude values that I have obtained from uniformly sampling time. So time is going to go through these uniformly spaced steps, and at every step I take the amplitude of the signal as my sample value. And I'm plotting this on the right using the stem command in MATLAB. Okay. Figure just generates a new figure. So I'm generating 1 figure with the continuous time on the left. The figure command generates a new figure, and I get the stem, and then I ask for the stem plot on the right. MATLAB code getting more familiar. That's still a little awkward at times. So again, this notation is just incredibly useful. Again, this is generating a vector for us. It starts at index 0, ends at tmax inclusive, and it gives us elements that are increments of ts. So we get 0, next element is tx, next element is ts, next element is 2ts, all the way up to tmax. So this is a nice way to quickly generate a vector of values that are uniformly spaced. Okay, now the sampling theorem, we're going to, you know, we certainly have talked about it. See if we can state it a little more formally. I don't know if we're recording or not, but we're on slide 5-3. We are. Okay, so slide 5-3. Sampling theorem, this is a more, a longer definition, so I'll read it a couple of times, you know, hang in there. So continuous time signal x of t with frequencies no higher than f max can be reconstructed exactly from its samples, x of, you know, n times capital Ts, if the samples are taken at a sampling rate of fs greater than 2f max. In other words, if I have more than two samples per period of the cosine, I have enough information to reconstruct, go from the samples in discrete time back to the continuous time signal. Now, how good the continuous time signal reconstruction is that's how, that's depends on lots of things. This theorem only says it's possible. It doesn't tell you how to do the reconstruction. It just says that it's possible. Okay, always the theory and the practice. This is the theory. So again, the theory, and this is great theory. So this is a great starting point. Continuous time signal x of t with frequencies no higher than f max can be reconstructed exactly from its samples. Exactly means no error. From its samples, x of t at times capital Ts, or sorry, x of little n times capital Ts. And capital Ts is our sampling time, which is 1 over the sampling rate. If the samples are taken at a sampling rate fs greater than 2f max. So that's wonderful. It's our starting point. We know we have to sample at least this fast if we want to capture enough frequency information to reconstruct the continuous time signal. So let's kind of think about one application. So compact disc audio. Someone named the decade that audio CDs were. Go ahead. 80s, very good. Now, can you give me the year? You're awesome, man. You are awesome. Yes. So Philips and Sony get the first patents on this. And those patents expire how many years later? How many years the patents work?
10 years.
Here's 19? 17. So 17. But there are ways you can extend it out with add-on patents. And there's ways you can make it longer. So after the 17-year mark, that was 1999. Patents ran out. So something had to give. So other technologies came along once those patents had elapsed. Okay. So sample it. So let's do sampling audio CD signals here. Again, normal hearing. There are some people that can hear outside this range. And as you know, as I've told you, as you get older, you don't hear those high frequencies like you used to, I'll tell you. So I don't hear above 15 kilohertz worth of darn. I had a senior design team that had lots of stuff above that, and I couldn't hear when they played it back. It just wasn't there. All right, so normal hearing is 20 hertz to 20 kilohertz. Okay, so that kind of gives us an idea what F max is, right? The maximum frequency that we care about is 20 kilohertz. So it kind of gives us some insight on where the sampling rate should be determined. So anything greater than 40 kilohertz would be a good choice. Okay, now, the next thing is, well, there's some other practical issues that we have to consider. So if we take an audio signal, really what we want to do is apply a filter to it that we pass frequencies up to 20 kilohertz, and then we attenuate frequencies that are above 20 kilohertz. And we'll get into more of this later in the class, but filters really don't suddenly go from passing frequencies to rejecting them. All right, so here is an example in the frequency domain. Give me a second. So if we take a look at the frequency domain, there are going to be some frequencies that we want to pass and some that we want to attenuate. And we cannot suddenly go from one to the other. So what I'm going to plot here are amplitude values of an example filter that I would apply to an audio signal before I sample it, so that I eliminate or I at least attenuate frequencies that are not going to get captured correctly by sampling. Okay, we call that aliasing. We'll talk more about that in this slide deck. Okay, so what I'd like to have is I'd like to have the filter respond with 1 if I'm going to pass something through, the frequency is going to pass. And I'd love to have the amplitude be zero if I'm not going to pass it at all. In practice, the problem is I can't zero out a whole band. So in practice, what will happen is at some point, we'll call this the maximum frequency that I can pass. I'm going to get a response that's approximately one. Now I'm going to draw you a more realistic one just to, let's see what I want. I'll do that. So what will really happen is I get a range of amplitude values and I can control what this is in my design. And then what will happen is above the stop band, I'll get something that looks like a frequencies above the stop band. I'll get a very low response in those frequencies, but it won't be zero. And then you can kind of eyeball the roll up here. So this is one of many types of filter magnitude responses you could get. But what you see here is I actually get some parameters here that, you know, we're going to look at this later in the class, but we have some response here. So we can pass certain frequencies to approximately one in magnitude response over this range from zero to F pass. And then at some later frequency, we can ensure that the response is below some threshold. So we can attenuate it below some amount. Now we pick this threshold A stop so that you don't hear these. All right, so we make it so quiet that we don't hear. Those frequencies are attenuated to the point we cannot hear them. They don't have to be zeroed out, just we don't want to hear them. Now in practice, there is a transition band. This is what's called a low pass filter. This passes low frequencies and attenuates high frequencies. There is a gap between the pass band and the stop band frequencies. And you can't make that gap zero in practice. You have to let a transition occur. Again, this is called the transition band. And it's about 10% of the pass band. So I'll call it 0.1 F pass. So it's about 10% of the passband frequency. And it's hard, you can make it a little bit smaller than that. It's a little bit tough it's hard to implement it, honestly. So a common rule of thumb, again, we'll see more of this later in the class, is about a 10% roll-off between passband frequency and stopband. So for this particular example, my passband frequency is at 20 kilohertz, sorry. Blue visible back row. How are we doing? Good. All right. And that means that if we allow this 10% roll-off to happen, that means the stop-band frequency, which is when I can have confidence that the frequency content will be reduced so much I can't hear it. That won't happen until 22 kilohertz. Now we can determine the sampling rate. Now my sampling rate needs to be greater than 2 times the stop band frequency. So again, in this case, the stop band frequency is at 22 kilohertz. So a sampling rate above 44 kilohertz would be fine. They went with 44.1. Why? Why 44.1? It's a little trivia. So for the reason for this was at that time, 1982, think back, or read back to 1982, not a lot of high data rate systems out there. So the highest data rate systems were TVs, and there were 3 international standards for analog broadcast TV. There was PAL and CCAM, and our own in the US, the NTSC standard. Those are the 3. But it turns out that if you use a video recorder and record 3 samples per line of video per frame, you get 44,100 as a sampling rate. So the initial recording was done taking the audio and storing it as video. This is before, you know, this is the early days, before the data converters were there. So that's why 44.1 was chosen. So, you know, since then, other rates are, you know, 48,000, 96,000, all kinds of sampling rates out there for audio. So this is 1982. But anyway, the point is you can see the sampling theorem at work. We're sampling it really just above 2F max. So the maximum frequency here is the highest frequency that we're going to hear after we filter. Well, that's right. We can't hear beyond 20 kilohertz anyway. So let me rephrase this. So what's going to happen in sampling is that these frequencies let me rewrite this sampling theorem. Okay, so what this is really saying, you say fs is greater than 2f max. Another way to write this is the maximum frequency that you can represent is 1/2 times the sampling rate. Now that means that any frequencies that are going to be in your signal larger than 1/2 the sampling rate are not going to get captured correctly, and they're going to alias, we'll look at this, they're going to sound like low frequencies. And so, yeah, you can't hear beyond 20 kilohertz normally, and that's true, but after sampling, frequencies above 22.05, and so FS is 44.1 kilohertz, the Fmax here is 22.05 kilohertz. That means any frequencies above 22.05 are going to alias down into the frequency bands that you can hear. And it's going to cause distortion. So what we do is we design the filter so that when that aliasing happens, you don't hear it. It's so low in volume that you don't hear it. Okay, now reconstruction is the dual process. So once I have samples, I want to fill in the missing information between the samples I have. There are many ways to do this. There isn't just one way to do this. Yeah, let's go back to one previous slide here in 5-2. So if I had the original samples here on the right, I don't know what's going on between the sample values. I have to fill in that information. This is interpolation. I have to interpolate between the values that I know. There are lots of ways I can interpolate between 2 amplitude values. Can you give me one way? There are many of them. So give me a way I might be able to fill in the amplitude values between the samples.
Linear.
Linear? Did I hear linear? Okay, so linear. I draw a line. It's like connecting the dots. You know? So we just simply draw a straight line, sample to sample. And in fact, that's what MATLAB does when it plots. Go ahead.
You can use a cubic formula.
You use a cubic formula. It's a bit later on the slide deck. We'll talk about that. That is, given these data values, can I fit a cubic or some other curve through the data? We'll look at cubic interpolation in a little bit in the slide deck. Comes a little bit later. What else can I do? You don't have to give me a great quality answer. Go ahead.
Can you do like linear between the points?
Linear between the points? Yeah, just draw a line. So you can, that is linear interpolation. Again, that's just connecting the dots, you know, like we might have done or maybe still do, to figure out what the hidden figure is on the piece of paper. Just connect the dots with lines. Exactly. And that's used in practice. All these are used in practice. So cubic interpolation is used in practice. Linear interpolation is used in practice. We do simpler than linear? Because linear needs 2 samples. What if I only had 1 sample? What would you do? I heard nearest. So I just take the nearest sample. So if I want to take a sample value and just hold it until the next sample arrives. I get a staircase approximation. Okay, it's blocky, but it's, hey, it's a way to do it. It's really simple. And we use that in practice too. There's a fourth way, which is to connect the dots with a specific shape, which you have seen already, and this is the sinc, S-I-N-C. This is a sine x over x. You saw this when you did the Fourier series of the square wave. You see a sinc. So we'll see more of that a little bit later. Lots of ways. There's four ways right there. There are more. That's four ways that are commonly used in practice. Okay, now for discrete time signals, 5-4, either the two possible things that in this class that we've been using. So I guess for all of our cases we've been synthesizing, except for the one time that I recorded the phoneme ah. Right, so I spoke into the microphone and recorded that. So in that case, the signal originated in speech, and then we recorded it through a microphone and an analog to digital converter and so forth. All right, so in that case, when the signal originates in continuous time, as shown on the right here, what we want to do is take these uniformly spaced samples in time, spaced apart by the sampling time or sampling period, sampling duration, capital TS. And the green dots here are the values of the continuous time signal at those discrete points where we're sampling. So mathematically, we're just taking whatever form, if it's a formula, we can take S of T and replace time with an integer multiple of the sampling period. Where is the, what happens when N is zero? Where are we? Zero, the time in seconds is zero, and that puts us right at the origin. When n is 1, it puts us here at capital TS. And when n is 2, it's 2 times capital TS. Now, n can be negative, so when n is negative 1, it puts us right here at minus capital TS. So n can be negative, zero, or positive in value. It's an integer. It's unit less. We could say it's a sample index just to have something to describe it by, but it doesn't have a physical quantity. We have now abstracted away the notion of seconds if we are talking only of the samples here of S of n. Now, in the back of our minds, we can keep track of the sampling rate that we use to pick up or to sample to get to S of n, which we can use later when we want to reconstruct S of n back to continuous time and analog domain. But in terms of crunching the numbers, it's just a vector of values. It's in MATLAB, Python, whatever, and we're just going to crunch those numbers in discrete time. And as I said, maybe at the very end of everything, we convert it back to continuous time and analog for playback. Well, then the question is, well, how do we choose the sampling period, capital TS? How would you do that? What do we know? We know how to choose the sampling rate. Right, and then the sampling time is what? Yeah, 1 over the sampling rate. So once I have the sampling rate, I know the sampling time. Now, I can also generate a discrete time signal purely by formula. We've been doing that a lot. Cosine being a good example of this. So this is synthesizing the discrete time signal, x of n here, and I happen to choose something that's not a sinusoid for a change. Okay, so here we have something that's quadratic in n. So just a formula, n squared minus 5n plus 3. And I've plotted this in MATLAB. So there's MATLAB code here somewhere. Okay. So I take, you know, I'm going to plot n over the indices 0 to 7 inclusive. And I'm going to just simply plot the amplitude values generated by this formula and nothing more. And again, you got to be careful because n's a vector, and so if I put a square here, I need the point-wise square operation, otherwise I get MATLAB isn't happy. All right, so the rest of it's fine. So n dot up caret 2 for the squaring of the vector values point by point. So anyway, so what's shown here is a stem plot of n squared minus 5n plus 3. And the question is, well, okay, what does it look like in continuous time? We talked about a couple issues here. So how does that look like? It could look like many things in continuous time. So give me one thing it might look. How would you decide what this looks like in continuous time? What's that? No, this is just a formula. I'm just showing it's a quadratic, so it's going to, you know, keep going up. So the points here are, you know, shown. Right, so it's just n squared, and so n, as n gets big, you know, the amplitude is going to keep growing. I'm just showing you 8 samples. So it's going to keep growing and growing and growing. But what I'm asking right here is over these, you know, how if I just looked at these 7 samples, how would they look like in continuous time? Well, here a parabola, it depends how I connect the dots. So the issue one is, how do I connect the dots? If I fit a curve that's at least a parabola, second order, a cubic third order, so I fit a polynomial, I use a polynomial fit to this data, yeah, I'll get back the formula. So you've helped me there how to connect the dots in amplitude. If I got one more dimension to worry about, what am I missing? Time. You haven't told me how to get the seconds. I've only got samples. So how do I interpret this? Right, so what is this distance between samples going to be? In seconds. Well, it's just the same. Well, so it's the placeholder is a sampling time, capital TS. And that's 1 over the sampling rate. So now I have to figure out, well, I now on the reconstruction, I have to associate some amount of seconds between 2 adjacent samples. That's my sampling time. So I have this notion of sampling time when I'm sampling, right, upper right. But I also have the same notion of sampling time when I want to reconstruct. That also means I have a notion of a sampling rate when I reconstruct, because I have to interpret these discrete time samples in continuous time. So again, it could look many ways. So now let's say I say that, you know, the sampling time is just 1 second. So now I'm getting, you know, going from 0 to 7 seconds. And I could do a square wave, hold the sample value till the next one comes and I get a staircase. I can do curve fit. Lots of options, right? So let's do a couple, I guess. So again, I have these sample values. Let's pick a few here, this one, this one. So now I need to figure out how long, you know, how many seconds are between, I need a sampling time that's here. Between indices 1 or 0 and 1, it's the same amount of time between any adjacent samples. Okay. Now that's step one. You know, so now I have a time axis. So in terms of indices n, I just had, if I pick TS to be 1 second, so if I have N in blue and seconds in black here, and again, the connection is that the time in seconds is just n times the sampling time. And if I let the sampling time be 1 second, then they're just the same value. So that's one dimension I've taken care of, which is the time axis. The second one is now the amplitude, the vertical dimension. And there are lots of ways. So I heard, curve fit is certainly one way I can do this. So I can try to fit curve through the points. This approach, to do this approach, the way you do the fit matters on the data itself. So it's a little bit more work. There are other methods that, the spline quadratic that you use, but we're going to do this a little later. Okay, so hold on that thought till the end. Another way to do this is to draw straight lines. Okay, so we can do that. We pick another color. Visible back row, red. Moderately. Stay with blue. All right. So if I went ahead and just do my best here doing a straight line fit, it's really not all that bad. I mean, there's a bit of a miss every now and then. Maybe it's good enough for the application, maybe not. So there is drawing straight lines with the points that I know. That's linear interpolation. Dotted lines with the curve fit. So if we, 5-5, so if we sample sinusoids, which we've been doing a lot in this class, all the way back to tune-up one in the first week, really. The sinusoids are kind of nice. We already know that they model physical quantities like musical tones. You could also use them to model the harmonics of those tones. That's nice. And we also know that a sum of sinusoids can represent well, this is a stronger claim. So the claim that we have talked about is that a sum of harmonically related sinusoids can capture what? A sum of harmonically related sinusoids can represent any periodic signal. Now, there's even a stronger claim, which we'll take the rest of the class to get through. Stronger claim says that a sum of sinusoids, where I allow a lot more frequencies than just the harmonics, I allow all real value frequencies to happen, that can represent any continuous time signal. That's a fairly dramatic claim. Okay, but we'll have to hold off till we get to the continuous time Fourier transform later in the last third of the class to fully justify that one, but it's kind of an interesting claim. All right, so let's go through the process of sampling a sinusoid and to see what happens to the frequency content after sampling. Here we're going to see aliasing and so forth mathematically and visually. All right, so we start with, so what I want to do is generate a discrete time signal that started as a continuous time sinusoid. And I want to take my continuous time sinusoid and sample it at uniformly spaced points in time, so little n times capital Ts. So my cosine would normally have been cosine of omega. So A is the amplitude, right? Cosine of omega times little t plus the phase phi. And all I've done here is take little t and replaced it with these sampling points at little n times capital Ts. And so you'll see this here in the formula for the cosine, that n times t, this is where little t was, and I've replaced it with little n times capital Ts. Now, if you look at the product here, remember, my signal in discrete time is a function of n, my sample index, again, which is unit less. So I have some other term, which is now my discrete time frequency, and we're going to call this omega hat. What are its units. Okay, the radians makes sense, right? And you have radians in there at the very least, because the argument for the cosine has to be in units of radians. So the phase phi is in radians, and omega hat has to be at least radians.
Per change in time?
Okay, per change in time, but what's the time variable? It's n. It's unitless. Okay, now we can say, maybe just for, so we can keep track of stuff, is n is a sample index. So you could say that the normalized frequency omega hat is in radians per sample, right? But sample isn't a physical unit. It's just a count. It's an integer value, really. Okay, so that, and that is, in fact, the units here. Okay, and let's see that happen mathematically. So we're inferring that from the formula. Let's see what happens. Well, omega hat is just from the sampling that we did on the previous equation here. So if you look at these three terms, well, the omega hat is simply omega, which we know is radians per second, times the sampling time, which is in seconds. So I kind of have a feeling about that. So radians per second, which is omega, and again, the sampling time is in seconds, so the seconds cancel, and I'm left with radians. Now, we can expand out lots of different ways this product omega times the sampling time. We can replace the sampling time with 1 over the sampling rate, which is in hertz. And omega is in radians per second. And f would be in cycles per second if it's hertz. So again, the seconds cancel out. I'm left with radians. The next one, which is incredibly important. This is about the most, well, I can't say it's the most, it's a top 10. This is a top 10, you know, circle it, send it to yourself by text, whatever, to remind yourself. This is incredibly important formula right here. And again, it's open book, open note on exams, but just kind of trying to build intuition. So the next thing we can do is expand out omega as 2 pi times f. Now we get something very interesting. We get 2 pi times the frequency that we started with in the continuous time sinusoid divided by the sampling rate. And again, so from a perspective of dimensional analysis, the f here is in hertz and fs is in hertz, so they cancel. I'm left with radians. And again, for sanity, we can say radians per sample. I tend to do that just so I know what it's related to as a frequency. So this is called a normalized radian frequency. What it tells you is, given the frequency in the continuous time domain, what does that frequency look like in discrete time? Well, you divide by the sampling rate, so there's a normalization that happens, and you multiply by 2 pi. This tells you how to map continuous time frequency to discrete time frequency, but it also tells you the opposite. It tells me how to map from discrete time frequency, omega hat, to continuous time frequency, f, right? So I just have to take the terms to the other side, and I can say f in hertz is going to be omega hat times the sampling rate divided by 2 pi, right? So it's one equation relating omega hat, discrete time frequency, and f, continuous time frequency. It allows me to go back and forth between the domains, continuous time and discrete time. So again, once we sample and we get to discrete time, we've abstracted away continuous time information. And in discrete time, frequency abstracts away continuous time frequency information. We normalize by the sampling rate. Let's do some examples. 5-6. All right, so here are three common sampling rates for speech. Is the first one, although you can still do audio this way, but it's not high quality audio. And there's also a little better audio quality in the next two rates. So here's the first one, speech. This is a common sampling rate. This was 2G and 3G cell phones. This was old landline phones. The sampling didn't happen at the landline, but it happened at the phone company in the central office. So we have a speech sampling rate here of 8,000 hertz. Okay, let's look at what happens at a continuous time frequency of 220. This is one you can hear. In fact, what is the note on the Western scale for 220? A, very good. In which octave?
Three,
very good. Hey, this is good. It'd be dangerous out there. You hear music. All right, so 220. And I use this relationship that the discrete time frequency is 2 pi times the continuous frequency divided by the sampling rate. And if we remove the common factors, I get 2 pi times 11 over 400, and I get a number, yeah, 0.17285. Next one up, sampling rate, now CD audio, and a lot of MP3 files started their lives as CD audio files back in the day. So that's also a sampling rate you'll see on some older MP3s. So it's 40. So sampling rate of 44,100. So now I'm asking you a continuous time of 441. So I'm a little bit off from small error from the 440 hertz, right, or Western or A4 note. And you put that through, and I get, you know, divide out the common factors of 441 divided by 44,100, and I get again 2 pi times 1 over 100. Last one up, another audio sampling rate, 48,000. Continuous time frequency of 1320. Does that sound maybe? Can you make a connection to something there in Western scale? It's a good guess. It's an A. It's related to an A. How about that? It's not an A, because A would be 440, then 880, and then the next one would be 1760. But what is 1320? 440 times 3, so it's the third harmonic of a 440 note.
See?
I don't know if that hits, that may hit something. So half of that would be at 660, yes. Good job, it's an E.
An E.
That's E on the Western scale. And again, so this is our relationship for the discrete time frequency omega hat. It's just 2 pi times the continuous frequency divided by the sampling rate. Now, I've chosen, another reason I've chosen these frequencies is to point something out. Omega hat is not terribly unique, because if you think about it, I've got one equation and two parameters. I got the continuous time frequency F and the sampling rate FS. So I've chosen these frequencies for another reason as well, is if you compare the first and third rows, you see that I get the same discrete time frequency, but yet it comes from two different sampling rates and two different continuous time frequencies, but the ratio is the same. So I get the same discrete time frequency omega hat. So if I take this discrete time signal and decide to play it back at, so again, I'm going to use omega hat that I got from either the first or third row. It's the same value, 0.1728. And I play it back at 8,000 hertz. What frequency will I hear? So I generate a cosine, discrete time frequency is 0.1728, sampling rate is 8,000 on playback, so what frequency do I hear? 220. I take the same sequence of samples in discrete time, same omega hat, 0.1728. I play back the samples at 48,000 hertz, sampling rate. Now what frequency do I hear? 1320. Okay, so something's funky here in discrete time. It's not unique. Right, the discrete time frequency, if I'm going to interpret this in continuous time, depends on two parameters, sampling rate and continuous time frequency. Oh, I hope it's, I didn't double check. that should be 220. Musicians will tell me if I'm, I intended to be 220. The Malloc code I used to generate these, right? And there's 1320. Now you notice something else. Which signal was longer in time? First one. So I took the same number of samples, but I played the first one back at 8,000 samples per second. Played the second one back at 48,000 samples per second. So how much shorter is the second audio signal?
Six times.
Because the second audio signal, when I'm sampling at 48,000, means 48,000 samples per second. So to play back 1 second, I need 48,000 samples. The one here is 8,000 sampling rate. So if I play back 1 second, I need how many samples? 8,000. Good. Okay. Never know. All right. So I generate something that's, 48,000 samples long, and I play it back at 8,000, how many seconds would that take? Six. And how many seconds would it take with the sampling rate of 48,000 hertz? One. Okay, so the one on the left will be six times longer than the one on the right. So again. And the MATLAB code for that. So the MATLAB code now, it's not a lot of coded, and it should be getting more and more familiar. Now we're in discrete time, so little n is my discrete time index. And now I generated 48,000 samples. And I used a discrete time frequency, omega hat, of 0.1728, like I did on rows 1 and 3. I generated a discrete time cosine, x as a function of discrete time index n. I played the first one back at a sampling rate of 8,000, pause for 3 seconds so you don't play on top of each other, and then played back. I could have paused for 1 second, would have been probably enough. Right. And then I did and I played back the same discrete time signal, but at a higher sampling rate, 48,000. Okay, now we're back to how to pick a sampling rate. So now we talk about, how much larger than 2 times F max do I need to be? I don't want to be 2F max. That can lead to some issues. I want to be greater than 2F max. And you already pointed out, that a larger sampling rate will track the waveform better in the time domain. I just have more samples per period. So think about a cosine at one frequency. If I have a larger sampling rate, I just have more samples per period to refer to. Okay, so here's some examples in the MATLAB codes on the next slide. Okay, so here I do is I take, let's pick some possible choices here. So if I do FS is 5 times F max, what that really means is I'm 2.5 times this minimum value that I'm supposed to be greater than, which is 2F max. So we call this 2.5 times oversampling. So let's kind of look at that. Right, so here's a couple of different examples. So here's the cosine at 1 on the right, upper right, is my cosine for all of this is at 100 hertz for all three examples. I have to sample at a sampling rate greater than what? Greater than 2 times that, so greater than 200 hertz. But then the question, how much greater than 200 hertz? Well, if I do, so this is my, this is, again, I've oversampled a lot here to try to make it look continuous time. But again, if you really look closely, you'll see the lines connecting the samples. Look really closely. All right. Upper right, I do 2.5 times oversampling, so my sampling rate is 500 hertz. Remember, I needed to be above 200. So I'm at 500. And so what I end up getting is I get 5 samples per period of the cosine. On the lower left, I have 10 times oversampling. So instead of sampling at when I sample just greater than 200 hertz, I'm sampling at 2,000, so that's 10 times, 2 times F max. Remember, F max is 100 hertz. And you'll notice now I'm getting, I should get 20 samples per period of the cosine. So I can, with that many more extra samples per period, I do a much better job tracking the amplitude on the lower left plot at 10x oversampling versus the upper right plot, which is 2.5 times oversampling. I can still reconstruct from the upper right. I can do a pretty good job. It's a lot more work, it turns out. But I can still do a lot more work than what's on the lower left. Lower left, I have so much more information about the amplitude. But the reconstruction is easier with the sample on the lower left. For the example on the lower left than the upper right. But nonetheless, in the upper right, because I'm obeying the sampling theorem, I can still reconstruct correctly from the samples. At least the theory tells me this. In practice, I have to do a lot of extra computation on the one on the upper right to make it look decent. Now, to generate this lower right plot, I use 10 times oversampling. What that means is I just use this, these same samples, and I just asked MATLAB through the plot command to simply draw a straight line to connect every pair of adjacent sample values. And you can kind of, again, you kind of see those artifacts if you look closely. And here's all the MATLAB code from the previous slide. So it's a little more involved than typical. Let's talk about aliasing. So I looked up the definition. I mean, I use this term a lot. So I was going, well, okay, what is, let's get a good definition. All right, so a false name used to conceal one's identity, also an assumed name. So 5-9. Now, we already saw something in its own way that was strange in the previous example where we had two different audio sampling rates and we got the same discrete time frequency out of it. But when we reconstruct it, so let's go back to that one. So it, you might think, well, that looks like aliasing to me. So we go back to slide 5-6. And it is an issue of that, you know, discrete time frequency omega hat is not unique when you interpret it in continuous time frequency domain, and that's true. So there is this side of it, which is the same discrete time frequency can give me different continuous time frequencies if I use a different sampling rate. But the nice thing is if I sample a continuous time sinusoid at a sampling rate, let's say 8,000, and I obey the sampling theorem, and I play back at 8,000, I get back the sinusoid that I started with. If I reconstruct with some effort and do a good job in the reconstruction. So that is an aliasing. That is to say that when whatever frequency I started with in continuous time, I get it back after sampling and reconstruction. The kind of situation that aliasing is going to be talking about is that a higher frequency can look like a lower frequency. So let's kind of look after we sample. So let's kind of work through this as an example. All right, so this is right from the book. Well, the MATLAB code is here, working somewhere. Okay, so here is two examples. So I have x2 and x1. So x1 is a cosine at 0.4 pi. So my discrete time frequency is 0.4 pi, radians per sample. I compare it against a cosine of 2.4 pi, radians per sample. And you look at this and you go, well, you know, this cosine has got this neat property, right? Every time I shift an angle by 2 pi or multiple 2 pi, I'm back where I started. So I can write 2.4 pi n, n is an integer, as 0.4 pi n plus 2 pi n. So now I have this phase shift that's an integer multiple of 2 pi. It means I'm back to where I started at 0.4 pi times n. So a discrete time frequency of 2.4 pi looks exactly like a cosine discrete time frequency of 0.4 times pi radians per sample. So visually, let's see what that looks like. Okay, so here is, so let's kind of get to 2.4. So if I have a continuous time frequency of 1.2 hertz, and I sample at 1 hertz, so the discrete time frequency is the ratio of those two times 2 pi. The ratio is 1.2, multiplied by 2 pi, I get 2.4 pi for my discrete time frequency. Okay, so here is my sinusoid at 1.2 hertz. I sample at 1 time per second. And you'll notice I'm not getting the 2 samples per sinusoidal period that I need to track it. I need slightly more than two. But I'm not even getting two. So I'm already on the next period. I'm not getting two samples per period, right? So you notice that where my samples are hitting is not tracking very well my original cosine. And now if I connect the dots of the samples that I have taken, I get a much lower frequency cosine that results. This is aliasing. Because I'm not following the sampling theorem, what happens is that my higher frequency now looks like a lower frequency after sampling. It looks like 0.2 hertz. Again, mathematically, it's just what's on the equation here, that a frequency of 2.4 pi radians per second is identical to a discrete time frequency of 0.4 pi radians per sample. So 0.4 pi radians per sample at a sampling rate of 1 hertz looks like 0.2 hertz. Now you notice that there's a kind of a connection here. How do you connect? What's the relationship between F2, FS, and F1? How do I go from F2 to F1? Subtract, right? So there's a periodicity that is interesting in the discrete time frequency domain. That I get periodicity, I get periodic replication in the frequency domain. Anyway, so what happens is that 1.2 hertz looks like 0.2 hertz. We'll see this graphically in a second. Now, there's your MATLAB code. It's a little bit more involved than usual. So what's on the right is just generating the plots. So it's 5-10. On the left is generating the two cosines. So you'll see generating, so omega hat is 0.4 times pi. I'm going to do 12 samples of this. X1 is the signal at 0.4 pi radians per sample in discrete time frequency. X2 is the signal at 2.4 pi radians per sample and so forth. So sampling rate is 1 hertz, and F1 is 0.2 hertz. F2 is 1.2 hertz, just like you saw in the previous slide. So we just have to then generate the two cosines and plot them. Okay, so let's kind of go through a lot of possibilities through sampling. So again, I'm going to start with continuous time cosine, amplitude capital A, frequency F naught, phase shift B. And I'm going to sample at just some sampling rate FS, which means my sampling time is 1 over that, so slide 5-11. So I take little x of t and I replace it with n times the sampling time, capital TS. Substitute that right into the equation. And to keep this in mind, what we get just from straight sampling. Now what I'm going to do is look at a different signal called Y. So we started with X, now I'm going to look at a signal called Y. Y of T is also a sinusoid, but now its frequency is F naught, what we had before, plus some integer multiple of the sampling rate. So it's a much higher frequency if L is positive. L is an integer. And so if L is greater than 1, or even if L is 1. If L is 1, it's a greater frequency. It's FS plus, it's F naught plus FS. But L can be an integer, including negative. Okay, so here's what's going to happen. I take Y of T, as I have it, replace little t with n times the sampling period to just sample it. So I directly substitute in little n times capital TS into the Y of T formula. So wherever T is, I replace it with N times TS. I distribute the addition with the multiplication, gives me three terms. So phi hasn't changed. So I get 2 pi F naught TS N plus 2 pi LFS TS N. Now we can notice that the sampling rate and the sampling time just reciprocals of each other. So if I multiply them together, I just get 1. So that term becomes 2 pi times integer L times integer N. So now I have a phase shift that's 2 pi times an integer, L times N. So that, simply because of periodicity, gives us back, in the argument, 2 pi F naught TSN plus the phase shift phi, which is exactly what X is. So now what this tells us is something even crazier. We don't have just one alias. We have an infinite number of aliases. Nuts, in theory. In practice, eventually frequencies can only go so high in terms of what we can measure and deal with. The theory says, well, there are an infinite number of these other frequencies that after sampling look exactly like F naught. Yikes. So that means that after sampling, Y of N is indistinguishable from X. They're identical. Okay, so that is the case when I take F naught and I add an integer multiple of the sampling rate FS to generate this new frequency that after sampling will alias down to F naught. There is another kind of aliasing, although it's still aliasing, but the book distinguishes it as a subclass of aliasing is called folding. And in this particular case, what it's going to look at is what happens to the negative frequencies. We know from phasors that the cosine is a sum of a positive frequency phasor and a negative frequency phasor. So if you look what happens to the negative frequency, something very similar happens. So I sample it, I get my cosine minus 2 pi f naught tsn plus a phase shift. Now, if I put another frequency in, that is the frequency I started with, which is minus F naught, now I add an integer multiple of the sampling rate, the same thing happens. Go through the same derivation, and I end up with the same situation. So again, same story, it's just that now in the derivation, instead of F naught, I have minus F naught. But the derivation follows the same pattern. I think I made a sign error in the middle term there. So distribute it won't affect the outcome. So the same derivation happens, and I'm left with, after sampling, Y of N is indistinguishable from X. So again, I take a frequency minus F naught, I add an integer multiple of the sampling rate, and it looks exactly like a sinusoidal frequency minus F naught. We're at 145. Okay, so we will pick up on this slide on Tuesday.